recording.
But I have to say, let me just include take the post-death and risk and include it in the presentation, and then it will be part of our because I'm sure yourself and together with your senior on the other end, we are just to guide us as we are the appropriateness of the procedure there. We've got to just be careful that we don't get out of line. You know, I just thinking aloud, our report on the annual budget had recommendations. As I had said, the Deputy Speaker has even referred that set of recommendations to the department. They should be taken on board, very, very important, because this whole process works like a funnel. Everything that we've been doing then gets chucked into this funnel, and then we are able to look in the whole picture in a consolidated manner. I trust if you could, one or another, just make sure that we get a copy of the recommendations of our report which we submitted earlier this year, and it becomes part of this. But in the meantime, can we just start looking at what we have in our disposal? I assume this is what you have. You're going to take us through this? Okay.
Sorry.
The first one is the BRRR report of 2010.
BRRR of 2010. Now, the following recommendations was made in that report: that the Department of Energy should closely monitor its expenses and carefully implement cost containment measures to avoid overspending on the allocated budget for Program 1, which is administration. Number 2, the Committee on Appropriations should look at ways to align reporting cycles and engage with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs to align and synchronize national, provincial, and local spheres of government planning, budgeting, and implementation of programs. This systemic governance issue is impeding planning and implementation of programs and should be seriously looked at and a joint committee meeting between Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs and the Portfolio Committee on Energy need to be convened to examine this matter. Do you want me to go through all of the recommendations there, or?
I think
okay.
Just to the challenge,
that's fine, sir. Number 3, that the business model of implementing INEP and solar water heaters by municipalities should be revised, revisited, and redesigned in order to transfers of funds to implement such programs should be based on the assessment of municipalities' technical capacity. Furthermore, the department should report to the Portfolio Committee on Energy on a business model to improve the current situation, which clearly define timeframes, with clearly defined timeframes. Number 4, the unfunded departmental activities to the amount of 203 million rand should be funded by National Treasury, because commitments have already been made by government in terms of World Cup guarantees, clean energy operations, international affiliations, accommodation, establishment of Sanedi and electrification internship program, and the department has also made commitments. However, the department must take cognizance and address underspending that was experienced in the 2009-10 financial year. That Transnet, number 6, should undertake the impact assessment of the delay on the multipurpose pipeline project and report this to the department within 30 days after the adoption of this report by the House. The department should in turn report on this issue to the Portfolio Committee on Energy 15 days after the receipt of the said report from Transnet. The National Treasury should consider allocating additional resources to the Department of Energy for the clean energy program of the department in order to implement renewable energy projects. Furthermore, the Department of Energy should report to the Portfolio Committee on Energy on the recruitment processes for the clean energy program. The latter report should be submitted to the Portfolio Committee on Energy every quarter for 3 coming years. Number 8, that the Department of Energy should report to the committee on the progress made on SWH's rollout on a monthly basis for a period of 3 months after the adoption of this report by the House. That the Department of Energy should consider the establishment of a designated monitoring and evaluation unit that will oversee the state-owned enterprises reporting to the department. That the Department of Energy should strengthen its oversight mechanisms over its state-owned enterprises in order to determine if they are fulfilling their strategic mandates and identify operational inefficiencies. The department should also consider establishing a special directorate that would oversee the SOEs. That the Department of Energy should focus more on hydrocarbons and clean energy sources in the country. That the campaign around changing consumer behavior on usage of energy, energy-saving lifestyle, one of the objectives of the Department of Energy, should be reflected on the department's revised strategic plans, since the Portfolio Committee on Energy supports the department's intentions to educate the public on the need to save energy. Those are all the recommendations as contained in the BRRR report of the committee of 2010, Chair.
Fine. I suppose the
honourable members at least that much your memories are refreshed, because this went through you late last year. But at least just to refresh our memories that these are the key things. Of course, I'm sure as we go along, you'll take notes and focus on areas that we just need to know and note for follow-up and how we handle that. Can you move on?
Number 2, the Kuberg Power Station, Darling Wind Energy Farm, which the committee adopted a couple of weeks ago, that report, was only the 2 recommendations made by the committee in that report. Number 1, the need to target public representatives in terms of raising awareness, as these public representatives would in turn communicate with people on the ground. Number 2, the committee would engage the department in order to ensure that something is done to avail more funds that would be dedicated towards public education around nuclear programs in the country. Could I continue, Chair?
Yes.
Then there was the Atlantis oversight visit, and the following recommendations was included in that report. For a project of this magnitude to succeed, it is crucial for the Department of Human Settlements to play a pivotal role in collaboration with the Department of Energy. Number 2, a pilot project of this nature could be replicated to the rest of the country if its implementation becomes a success. The concerns, number 3, raised by Muntu Industries representatives were noted. However, the committee requested a more detailed report spelling out the challenges faced in order for the committee to intervene. Number four, a joint briefing with other relevant committees, such as human settlements and water environmental affairs, needed to be called to share information about the Witsand project and how they could participate in ensuring that some of the challenges raised could be addressed. Joint sessions and oversight with committees that can play a pivotal role should be strongly considered. The spirit of cooperative governance should prevail for this to be a success. Number six, more publicity should be given to the Witsand project. This is a project that had already received recognition from major institutions such as the Eskom ITA Award 2009 runner-up. Number seven, there is a need to strengthen, promote, and encourage private-public partnerships, PPPs, in communities such as Atlantis. Then the next report.
Let's go a little bit down.
Down, Jay, or up?
No, up. Atlantis. This report was adopted subject to a little bit of cleaning up, which I did.
Right.
Now, was that done?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the things that I see there, I think it's because of the structure of the report, unfortunately, is that there's nothing about the CAE or CEA, Cape Advanced Engineering.
And that was in the findings.
Yeah, but we did make
a
commitment that we'll be doing something about them.
Follow up.
Okay, let's just keep that in mind.
All right, sir.
Because at the end of the day, it will need the attention of the department.
Then, the fourth report, as indicated earlier, the CEF report. The first one relates to the recommendations included in that report from the briefing by Petro SA. Number one, the committee recommended that Petro SA should do more in terms of training and providing opportunities for work to local citizens. The committee ended by committing to seek a legal opinion regarding the status of a regulator and a player under one roof, CEF. The committee to look into whether SFF could receive funding from the state. The committee would engage the Department of Energy to determine why the strategic stock kept by SFF for security during crisis was only meant to cover the country for 21 days. Number five, the committee to set aside time to visit the Sultana Bay facilities where the country's strategic stock was being kept by SFF. Petro SA was urged to do more in terms of increasing numbers of employers who go through the Center of Excellence. Then, the recommendations as included in that report relating to the CEF. Number one, procurement details were missing or not addressed to the satisfaction of the committee. This was the case with a number of CEF affiliates which made presentations. Two, the committee expressed disappointment with the CEF's chief executive officer's conduct during the entire oversight visit. It was felt that the CEO acted untowardly by choosing not to be part of the CEF officials without giving reasons for his absence. Number three, staff turnover levels seem to be alarmingly high. The committee is concerned about the number of managers in acting capacity and whether that did not affect efficiency. Number four, concerns were raised over a large number of projects that were terminated after investing substantial amounts of resources. CEF requested to clarify its strategy regarding its taking of decisions to embark on projects and how they conduct their feasibility studies. Number five, The committee was concerned about the delays in obtaining the Section 54 approval. An explanation would be needed as to why obtaining the approval from the National Treasury was difficult.
Can you note that we need to get some information? Section 54 of which act or which set of regulations?
Number six, the information shared concerning the Darling Wind Power Project was far from convincing. A detailed report on the community trust was needed with reasons for the delays and lack of communication. Number seven, the committee was concerned about where CEF will get the 30 million euros investment. An explanation was sought as to how CEF decides to get involved in certain investments, some which are very risky and costly. That is that check.
It can be that.
Honourable Member, I'm sure you also can concur with me. What has been presented at this stage in time is what was done, in fact, during the time when I had joined you. The question is, where is the stuff that took place before I joined you fully? You know, the visits to Lesotho, Mozambique, Ghana, Korea, France, Mozambique. Because all I remember is the is the reports which I just facilitated for formal submissions to the DNA table. Yes, ma'am.
I recall that there were reports tabled, especially for the visits in Mozambique and stuff. I think Gwebu should be able to assist in that regard. He was the secretary there. So maybe we should just find out.
I raised that with the committee secretary yesterday. So all he needs to relate to us is that what response and help did he get from both Gwebu and the manager, you know. Because everything now is going to be put here. As you can see, we're not taking it to what we observed and whatever. It's just we're distilling now. Here are the key points now. How do we crystallize everything such that they fit into this exercise that we're doing?
We don't just talk in a vacuum. Something has to be done. So that, you know, and you're right. It's got to be challenged.
Mr. Kozay, were you able to get anything from these two gentlemen you are referring to?
Nothing, Chair. I inquired yesterday afternoon after our meeting, and Pilot indicated they have a meeting now this morning as well, Chair. And I emailed him last night and SMSed him last night, and he said that he was going to forward to me, and then he was busy now again this morning, Chair. And I've also requested him to forward the report to the committee assistants while I'm here. So, yes, Chair. So, nothing thus far, Chair. Because these are the ones that I've received from him prior to this meeting.
Nando, can I tap from your whisper, Tom? Let's give some guidance on this. I will not talk of reports of you know, last month.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you. I think the other person who is also supposed to be involved is Peter Paul. When we talk about Petro SA, we were with Peter Paul.
The key thing we want now is recommendations as processed by the staff, here. Because we are looking at the key issues which we are going to integrate into the report, particularly the other side, the main component of the of the report will look into his recommendations. We take on board what we had recommended. Say, for instance, when you came back from France, if there's a recommendation that you feel is worth integrating in the PRR report, maybe whoever went to Ghana or Mozambique, if there's an issue, even if it was an observation that you want to turn, convert it into a recommendation. So, unless there's something that Peter Paul has got which the staff doesn't have, if everything is in the records, then it's either Mr. Gwebu, but then it's Mr. Godse today. But then he himself depends on the other two, you know, Mr. Gwebu, the former committee secretary, and under the leadership of Mr. Mkhize, the who manages both of them. I am very uncomfortable by this response. Not casting any aspersions on you, because I sensed, trusting on what the committee secretary has been saying before, that he did alert them that he needs the records. And all we said as we were preparing for this is that you just get the electronic copies of the report, you go right at the end, you copy the recommendations, you splash them here so that you can see them. No hard copies. You wanted hard copies. I said, no. We don't want to cut any more trees, because it's just a matter of refreshing the members' mind, you know, the memory. In fact, and to say, this is what we went through. Now, what we're doing here now is to distill and say, okay, out of this, whole shopping list of recommendations, this is how we're consolidating them towards the, or even tomorrow, for tomorrow's purpose as well, these are the things we would like to check with the department. I mean, I'm referring to last year's BRR report. There obviously are a couple of things that we would begin to get from the department to share with us about how far do they go. We may have been asking and commenting on them throughout the year, but now we want to formally get an update on that. But then, members, at the end of the day, here we are. Mr. Dexter, I'm sure you can join us now. We've just gone through summaries of various oversight visits, the last year's BRR report and stuff. And then we're saying that, look, what is it that we are capturing and consolidating and crystallizing for this budget review process, which will be captured in the recommendations? Now, where we are stuck now is, precisely, is all the stuff that was done before I joined you as a chair. You know, your Ghana, Mozambique, France, Korea, and whatever other traveling. Let's play around it. I'm very, very uncomfortable, because it's not that we did not try, to ensure that we assist the members. What do we do now? Do we wait? Do we take a break, or do we proceed, or whatever? There's a risk if we just move on without trying ways and means of getting that, at least recommendations or any observations that came out of those meetings. Baba Lucas?
Chair, I think we also have to remember that on these trips, there were the researchers. And I think the researchers were there specifically to take notes. So maybe if there's no, there's some information which I definitely think would come from that angle.
Chair, my concern goes deeper than what the Honourable Lucas is saying. Why should the secretary be having problems getting those reports or records?
That's the major.
It shouldn't be. These are. Committee reports, whoever moves, leaves them there and moves on. And I don't know why the secretary should be having this problem.
Because there's no report.
Yes. Ah, thanks, Chair. My apologies for coming late. But, Chair, you see, I must be frank. It's entirely unacceptable to me that we as members have to come and sit here and listen to all this stuff. You know, if the reports are not there, then somebody's head must roll for it. But it can't be us to sit here now and painfully try to remember all these things and who was there and who wasn't there. It's not acceptable. We've got work to do here in the committee. So I think, Chair, we should just mandate you. If they can't provide the reports, then you should have a meeting with the management and parliament, because it's not just this committee where you have these problems, by the way. Now, people are paid to do this work. It's either they do it, or we must get somebody else to do it. Really. And, you know, we'll just have to accept what's lost is lost. But going forward, we can't operate like this. But I don't think we should sit here and agonize and spend a lot of time trying to remember, you know. It's just not acceptable. I don't think we get paid to do that as members of parliament.
No, no, Baba Tester, can I help? The reports are there. In fact, there are just two which we have not formally adopted, because I remember, if I can put an example, Baba Lucas, you went to one place on your own. So when the report was submitted, you were not around. So we're waiting for you just to help to adopt it. The reports are there. The documents are there. All we wanted to do is to just extract observations and recommendations from those reports, so that we can help your memory, so that when we're sitting collective like this, we can actually identify things that can, issues that can then be factored in into the process now. Now, what I then arranged with the committee secretary is that let him go now to his predecessor with the assistance of the manager to say, get me the electronic versions of those reports. Let me extract all the stuff. Then that should have been appearing as it is happening now, you see, so that then you can say, oh, I remember, that was a crucial issue. Yes, let us factor it in this current process, you know. Now, the thing is now, it's one thing to say there's no report. The reports are there somewhere. Now, the question is, why is it that, anyway, you're right, we shouldn't be organizing, but it's really frustrating, because it's not about starting from scratch. It's just about, look, where is the electronic version of the document located? Yeah.
It's not relevant to the citizen. Where is the report? Is it paid? Is it not? That's my question. I'm saying, if they don't do it, fire them and get somebody who will. Like, I don't want to come into the committee and as I think, agonize over what is the problem in the community picture. It's not my issue here. And it's not the issue of this committee. So I want to mandate you to go there and sort them out.
The greatest problem is that if the Secretary of Parliament does not sort them out. But obviously, let us formally say that I will raise this matter very seriously with him in the strongest terms. Can I suggest now, let's just take a 10-minute break so that we can check with Mr. Kosse. Yes.
We mandate you to go and meet with the Secretary of Parliament and to raise this issue and inform him that if by next week it's not resolved, we will formally table a complaint as this committee in the National Assembly. I think that's what we should do. Because you see, really, because it's nonsense. We had all these problems, I don't know, since this committee started, you know.
Okay, if I just take a 10-minute break and see if there's been any progress on this matter.
Thank you. was discussed.
Hmm.
Yes. But then, it hasn't been filed, I think.
Which one?
This one.
Who?
No, Peter Paul. You can't believe Peter Paul is responsible.
Honorable Ross?
Yes, Chair, if I can just add to the France study, Chair, this is very flimsy, and I don't think it's acceptable. We have a comprehensive report in terms of the France study, Chair, and we have also those safety feature issues, which we later on compared with the Fukushima incident, and we have a lot on nuclear, and I think we can't just table this. We have to add it, and I'm quite sure I have a report on the French study, Chair. I do have it. My own report and a report from the department. So if I can just forward it to Rico for the next round, that we'll add it, and then we can refine this, the nuclear issue. Because firstly, the first bullet point on number 6 is about renewable energy, and then just the second bullet is just a very flimsy thing today. Governments around the world are embracing it. This doesn't really make sense. It's not up to standard.
I think someone is trying to fool us here. It's just as simple as that. Someone, I want it on record, I have this record, I can say that in front of the speaker and anyone. Someone is just trying to fool us here. I may have not gone through the France et al. Report, thoroughly, but I just, that I can vouch. You can't say we've extracted, key issues out of the France et al. Report on this. So, Honorable Dexter, your points earlier on are very valid. I think I'm going to make sure that I have audience with the managers of committee support on my way towards the secretary. Because at the end of the day, if our work which is compromised, we can't be producing reports and not distill key issues out of them so that we can take them forward. Because this is what is happening. We know what is that something is, decisions were taken, recommendations were made, observations were done. Over the times, even observations, down the line, we find that an observation can be turned into a recommendation, and that's not forthcoming here.
Can I make a proposal on
this? Yes, yes.
Well, Chair, I think given the situation, maybe we should allow you to do that, but also that should give us at least some time to do our own proposals, like just a day. We don't need more than a day. Because we're meeting tomorrow morning, aren't we? So that we can work on this, come up with what we believe is the proper wording. Because I think if we wait for another redraft, personally I'm not confident that we'll see any improvement. I'd much rather we were allowed to work on it. It would be a faster process, Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think this is what you call wasteful expenditure. Yeah. If you've done what they say on 8th or 6th, the France tour, I think it is. It's an insult.
Yeah.
You cannot take so many people out and then come back with two and say nothing.
We just in the government policy.
Our members, we've got these recommendations from Budget Vote 29. At least I can vouch for them because I'm aware of them. And obviously, well, the thing is, they've been submitted to the National Assembly table in any case. But I think for way forward, we can also play around with them because we are using them now as a way forward. That on that basis, I concur with you. Yes, sir.
I mean, if you look at the first one, it says the energy efficiency project should gain much needed momentum. I mean, that's not really a recommendation. We should be saying that the department must prioritize these to speed up these initiatives, and that it should be clearly visible in the programs of the department. So, you know what I mean? By tightening up, I'm not saying you change the subject,
essence.
The essence is, but it needs to be worded in such a way so that there's a follow-up to say, if the department doesn't do that, next year we can hold them to account.
No, fine. It is difficult that the budget vote recommendations should be integrated in this electronic slide. And we should then move with speed within the day to add other areas. Whilst members will be doing on their own, looking at their own notes in preparation for tomorrow. So tomorrow's meeting will have this item carried over in any case. Assuming that the Auditor General's delegates or the personnel is on its way, can we just then go back to these other recommendations and see if there's anything we can apply our minds on, because it was quite lengthy, and in certain instances you may find that there's repetition, although the repetition confirms the urgency and the vitality and the significance of the issue, but at the same time we need to make sure that we do some consultation around that. Good example is the issues around solar water heaters, the rehabilitation of the infrastructure, the rationalization of electricity supply and distribution, just to see that we try our best to come with one position on that. Let's go back a little bit once again. In terms of the BRRR of 2010-2011, there were about 9 areas that were raised there. Now, that link with others, is there anything that you'd like to see being taken over into our current report, or even as an observation? Maybe let me come in this way. The first point is that the last year's PRRR concluded that the Department of Energy should closely monitor its expenses, one, and two, it must carefully implement cost containment measures to avoid overspending, particularly in terms of Program 1. Now, I'm sure it's logical then we check from the Auditor General's side as a starter, although we may expect an update from the department itself. What were they saying with regard to that? So that we can then take a decision on this matter forward. I'm just looking at the audit outcomes from the AG, what they presented to us 2 days ago. One of the things that they raised was the findings on consistency and measurability were identified in the report on predetermined objectives. And also there was non-compliance with regard to the PFMA and DORA. To me, before we conclude that first point, I propose that we get details of what the Auditor General was saying on those two things, so that we can say either the department did not do according to the recommendations here, or they did perform partially, or they did fulfill them, and what is if the finding of the Auditor General is elsewhere. Did they closely monitor their expenses? Did they ensure with regards to Program 1 there's appropriate cost containment such that there was no ever expenditure? I think that's fine to me on that one. The second one is a business model. Okay, the second bullet point is that's supposed to be a recommendation to the Committee on Appropriations, which I'm sure we can follow up. With the committee, but also the second part of it is that there was supposed to be a joint effort through a joint committee between our portfolio committees. Oh, that point that I suppose we put that aside for now. But then the third bullet point is about the business model on implementing INEP and solar water heaters. And the department was supposed to have worked on a business model. I think that's fairly clear that we need to get to know what happened. I mean, that was last year's recommendation. The third one was followed by there's no way you can move this from here. Okay. The fourth point is just above the point above where Transnet is. Okay, it's Transnet, I'm sorry. As unfunded department activities, the amount of 203 million rand should be funded by the National Treasury. That should come out of the... That should reflect on the financial report, whether that was done. Much more from National Treasury side, if it would come out of them or if it would to be processed through us. But that was to address the financing of World Cup activities. That's followed by the Transnet Multipurpose Pipeline Project. Now, there were deadlines there, according to the recommendation, that within 30 days, Transnet should report to the department after 30 days after adoption of the report by the House. And then thereafter, in 10, the department should report to this committee within 15 days. That's something that we need to check. Followed by the department's focus on clean energy programs in order to implement renewable energy projects. The department is supposed to report to us on recruitment processes for clean energy program. And they were supposed to be quarterly reports. I thought we were saying the lady should sit here because now we need to go a little bit down. You can't be writing and then the solar water heaters, the rollout. The department are supposed to be reporting to us on a monthly basis for a period of 3 months after adoption of the previous report. Followed by establishment of a monitoring and evaluation unit for state-owned enterprises. And followed by a focus on hydrocarbons and clean energy sources. I think that one is it's something that can be catered for in the IRP members. The last one is energy efficiency. I think generally it's about energy efficiency. Let's come to Quebec and the Darling Wind Energy Farm. Mr. Kota, where did you get this information? Maybe let's focus on the Atlantis report. But even there, honorable members, I think that the problems the Atlantis report, it's issues that we still have to take up because it has just been submitted into the system. There seem to be a couple of things amongst others. It's much more of what we ourselves need to be doing. Of course, the first one, you've got to make sure that the department works with the Department of Human Settlements. And also, we have to ensure we get joint briefings and joint oversight. And from us, we were supposed to be making a follow-up on the request of the two companies, Mundo Industries and the Cape Advanced Engineering. I think that's mainly all from us. one. This is just one area where it's quite lengthy. I think with regards to Petro SA, all those issues could be converted into proper recommendations. But when it comes to CF, if you look at the first one, I think what we need to actually say is that we require that CF gives us procurement details, how they've been performing. In terms of previous procurements. The second bullet point about the CF Chief Executive Officer is history now because he has resigned. The third bullet point, I'm sure what we would be saying is that we would like to have an update of the status quo in terms of the managers, who's still in an acting capacity. And that would definitely link up with what we've been constantly raising with the department, that we would like to see acting positions for an unnecessarily lengthy time. The projects that were terminated, while we would have to make sure that we recommend strongly to CEF that they give us a specific report on that, about which projects were terminated on what basis, and also in future how they are going to remedy that. The one in red is a very tricky one, which I think we need to really work out the strategy there. If I remember, honorable members, in that problem is that one of the reasons why at times CEF would withdraw from projects around renewable energy because it was regarded as a state-owned enterprise and therefore denied access to the grants and making it regard some of the initiatives as unviable. The Ali Wind Power Energy Project is one good example. The second last bullet point, my understanding is that we were going to get a detailed report on the community trust, so CEF as well as the DBSA was going to help us with a report on that one. The last one, bullet point as well, would expect the CEF to give us information around its capital raising plan. For now, can we say that's done? But this is merely provisional because we need to look at other areas or other reports, like as you say, the France, and we then take it from there. But I must say that this has really destabilized us. We're trying to do our level best, but we're limping because we should have had all the information in one time, and we should have been able to apply our minds that what is it that we're identifying as key issues. But I hope the community secretary has noted issues that, you know, have been raised. And because I must say, you know, even within today, you should indicate to the department quite formally, particularly with reference to the previous report, areas that they would like them to indicate how far did they go. You know, there were things that they were supposed to have done. I mean, it's a year now. The business model was supposed to have been put in place. The periodic reports, the establishment of the monitoring and evaluation unit, and so forth and so forth. It's understandable on things like the energy efficiency initiatives, because we do expect a report as the department has committed towards the end of this year. That's fine. Not that they wouldn't make comments, but the other ones where they were supposed to have been taking specific action, we definitely would like them to make some additions even for tomorrow's presentation. Honourable members, can you close into that? We're going to consolidate this document, but also on the other hand, you will do your best to look at your notes and see what other issues you can pick up. Can you bring this item to a close now? But of course, it's one area of our extreme unhappiness as to what kind of support are we getting in this. I mean, even myself, from just limping along, trying to make sure that we do our best in this. Now we've got the Auditor General to take us through techniques of how to analyze financial reports. And I must say to the Auditor General's office, please, next time, try to do your level best. We know we're under pressure. We know you're under pressure. But this is not one. You know, we spend very little time here, and we'd like to make sure that the little time we spend it as productive as is possible. But my understanding is that around this issue, it was sent to you not verbally, but in writing. So it baffles me, unless you can give me another explanation as to why it was not done when you came for the first time. But in any case, we are here now. We welcome you. Let me pass everything over to you. The floor is yours.
Can you just give me 5 minutes to get the presentation on these computers, please?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the committee also for allowing us to do a follow-up on the presentation that we were supposed to do on Tuesday. We apologize for any misunderstanding, and we'll definitely persist in making sure that we address your concerns, your requests, in the follow-up sessions that we will have with your committee. Chair, just to make sure that we confirm what we are going to present to you today and to the committee, is that we are going to give you a presentation to better analyze and understand our audit report that is included in all the annual financial statements that the department and the entities table that you would have received in your research. So we're going to look at the audit report and then analyze the audit report so that you, from our presentation on Tuesday, make clear that what you need to look at if you are looking at the audit report. Just by introduction, my name is Fabian Struwig. I'm a senior manager at the Auditor General of South Africa. I'm within the business unit that is responsible for the portfolio of energy. With me is Harald van den Berg. He is my manager on the Department of Energy, and then also our parliamentary liaison manager, Sanere, which joined us for this meeting from the Auditor General's point. Going to the slide, as you know, we've got a reputational promise that we would like to achieve every time that we engage with all the stakeholders that we have. The Auditor General has a constitutional mandate. As a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, and thereby building public confidence. So for us, it's very important that that we state that we want to also assist this oversight committee in achieving that public confidence, and we would then supply you with the information that we have in order to facilitate that conversation. Just as a first start off, this slide explains just the portfolio that we are looking at. We have the Department of Energy with its entities within the portfolio, and that portfolio consists of 47 audit reports that we issue. Now, you would ask, why is there only those few logos, but 47 audit reports? You would know that there's a lot of subsidiaries to these entities, like, for instance, SEF, as the major part of the subsidiaries is within the SEF group of companies, together with Nexa. They probably make up the largest part of it. I will get back to the table that you see on this slide with all the outcomes of our energy portfolio audit reports that we've finalized for the 2010-11 financial year. I just wanted to, with this slide, set the scene in terms of what I would like to achieve with this session with yourself, is to make sure that you understand when we talk about those categories of audit outcomes. The first category being financially unqualified with no findings on predetermined objectives or compliance with laws and regulations, the green line. Then the second line, we have the yellow line, where we talk about the financial unqualified with findings on predetermined objectives and or compliance with laws and regulations. And those we generally, those two top lines, the green and the yellow one, we refer to the financially unqualified financial statements. And I'll get to the terminology so that we can just make sure that everybody understands the terminology. Then the ones in amber and red is the ones where we refer to the financially qualified financial statements. And those are the qualified opinions, adverse opinions, and disclaimer of opinions, which you can see is a relief that you would do not have any entities in those categories in this portfolio. Then we get to the total number, which is the 47. The difference from last year to this year is basically just the department, which has been reported for the first time this year, which was included in the Department of Minerals and Energy in the previous year.
Then, which is also important, and which I will explain when we get to the slide later on again, is those categories at the bottom where we talk about the number of audits in which findings arose from the HSA's other legal reporting responsibilities. And those are the things on performance objectives, compliance, and then both, where you would see that although a financial outcome is unqualified, if you still have findings on those categories, you did not achieve the clean audit status or clean administration that we would want to promote in the public sector. So I'll come back to the this table. I didn't mention that if there's any questions from the members, you can stop me and you can ask the questions, or we can have it afterwards as well. So what I would like to just confirm in this session, first of all, is the legislative requirements. I'm going to deal with the opinions. I'm going to deal with emphasis of matters and additional matters. I'm going to deal with audit on predetermined objectives. I'm going to deal with compliance with laws and regulations. I'm going to deal with the audit report structure. I'm going to deal with the audit outcomes of the Department of Energy, very briefly, because we did have that part in our previous slide show that we had on Tuesday. And then I'm going to have, again, the portfolio outcome, which I just mentioned now. Okay, by start, in terms of the legislative requirement, first of all, we've got the Public Finance Management Act that prescribes certain responsibilities to both the accounting officer or accounting authority and to ourselves, the Auditor General. Now, the first is in section, I'm just dealing with the department side. I'm not going to deal with the accounting authority because it would be similar for accounting authority as with the accounting officer. In section 41A and B, it requires the accounting officer to keep records and then to prepare the financial statements for audit on an annual basis. Secondly, in section 41C, the accounting officer needs to submit those financial statements to the Auditor General for audit. Those are all legislative requirements, and they've got certain timelines that you are aware of. For the Auditor General in the PFMA in section 40, subsection 2, it requires us to then audit those set of financial statements that has been submitted to us by the accounting officer or authority. Then our role comes in terms, first of all, in terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. In section 188, it requires that the Auditor General must audit and report on accounts, financial statements, and financial management of government institutions. So that is where we derive our mandate. From that, you would see on the right-hand side of the slide, we've got the Public Audit Act. And in section 20, it requires the Auditor General then to prepare an audit report which contains an opinion or conclusion on the three following items. First of all, on the financial statements and the financial position, so that is your income statement and balance sheet and the old terminologies. Then we have an opinion or conclusion on predetermined objectives. And then lastly, opinion or conclusion on the compliance and financial management. So I'm going to, from here on, and you'll see on my slides, I have those three items on each slide to just confirm that which part of the audit report I am referring to. Okay. First of all, on the opinions, and here, as I said, the first part, the financial statements and financial position part, an auditor in any industry, both private and public, has certain opinions that we can issue in an audit report. Now, those are the four basic opinions. We would, in the first instance, have an unqualified audit opinion, which is a positive audit opinion. So it means that from the auditor's point of view, we are satisfied with the set of financial statements that has been submitted by management. Then we have the modified audit opinions, which is grouped together. The first of those are the qualified audit opinion. We've got a disclaimer and an adverse opinion. So the slides that I have after this one just
gives the description of each of those. As I said in the first instance, our positive audit opinion, which is the unmodified or the unqualified audit opinion, that first time, that the unqualified opinion is expressed when the auditor concludes that the financial statements give a true and fair view in accordance with the applicable financial reporting framework. Now, it is important for me to stress the fact that we've got different financial reporting frameworks in the public sector. First of all, we've got the modified cash basis of accounting for departments only, national and provincial departments. Then we have two sets of financial reporting frameworks for public entities, and those are determined by National Treasury on an annual basis. I haven't included that on the slides, but this is for information. Those are the generally recognized accounting practice, shortly known as GRAP, and then we've got the South African Statements of Generally Accepted Accounting Practice, which is in short our GARP. So we audit against those frameworks and we provide an opinion. The line highlighted in light blue there is a category which I will come back again in terms of when we issue an emphasis of matter. But that is basically just saying, in addition to such an emphasis of matter paragraph, does not affect the auditor's opinion on whether the financial statements are fairly presented. So an emphasis of matter basically doesn't affect our opinion. It just, as the word is saying, it's emphasizing a matter which is already disclosed. And I'll get back to that emphasis of matter. A modified audit opinion, the first one, as I said, is the qualified one. Now, a qualified audit opinion is basically that we express when the auditor concludes that an unqualified audit opinion cannot be expressed. Therefore, it's the opposite of the unqualified, is a qualified, but that the effect of any disagreement with management regarding the departures from the financial reporting framework or the limitations on scope is not so material and pervasive as to require an adverse opinion or a disclaimer of opinion. So if you look at, again, if we go back, and I'll get back to that table that I had in the beginning, this is the amber. Let me just quickly go back to that one. This is the amber line there in the middle, qualified audit opinion. So we're saying that that is a negative opinion, but it is less than the two that we're going to deal with on this side. The first one is the disclaimer. Now, a disclaimer is precisely what the word means, is that a disclaimer of opinion is expressed when the possible effects of a limitation on scope is so material and pervasive that the auditor has not been able to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to form an opinion and accordingly is unable to express an opinion on the financial statements. So that one is actually the worst type of opinion that you can get in an audit. It's basically saying that from an audit point of view, which is a third assurance level for an entity, to say that what a user will look at in terms of the annual report is credible or not. If we are saying we are disclaiming from giving an opinion, it says that we do not have any confidence in the set of financial statements because we couldn't get any supporting documents to support what is in that set of financial statements. The third and last category in the modified audit opinion category is then the adverse one. The adverse one is basically the qualified audit opinion, which is more material and pervasive. It says that it is expressed when the effects of a disagreement with management regarding departures from the financial reporting framework is so material and pervasive to the financial statements that the auditor concludes that a qualified opinion of the report is not adequate to disclose the misleading or inaccurate nature of the financial statements. So we're saying that this is also a very material and a misleading or incomplete nature throughout the financial statements. So it is not isolated to one part. So that is basically a summary of what type of opinions we can provide on the set of financial statements. Now, to come back to what I mentioned earlier, emphasis of matter or additional matters paragraph, which you will also get in an audit report, basically what we are saying is that this is to draw the users of the financial statements attention to a matter that we need to highlight. Now these are, and I'll get to the examples, are very much regulated by international standards on audit. There are only a few matters that we can highlight, and also in terms of the additional matters, only a few things that we can highlight. So to give you a summary of what is an emphasis of matter and what is additional matters, basically an emphasis of matter is to draw the user's attention to a matter presented or disclosed in a financial statement, which is of such an importance that it's fundamental to the understanding of the financial statements. So we as auditors feel that their users would need to see this part in the annual report. So an emphasis of matter is basically saying that we are highlighting a part of the annual report. Additional matters is something different. That is in order to draw the user's attention to any matter other than those presented or disclosed in the financial statements, which is relevant to the user's understanding of the audit, the auditor's responsibility, or the auditor's report. So the additional matters is more reflecting on us as the auditors than it is for the entity, whereas the emphasis of matter is for the entity more than us for the auditors. So, but still, I want to emphasize that last part. It does not affect our opinion. It is basically highlighting a matter. As I said, these are the examples of both categories. On the emphasis of matter, we can emphasize the financial reporting framework, and that would be in instances where the entity are prescribed by National Treasury to conform to a financial reporting framework, like for instance modified cash basis accounting, but they didn't, they went on to GRAP. We would then emphasize that to make sure that the user understands that. Secondly, we can highlight significant uncertainties. That would be in the case where we have a legal case pending, so we would draw emphasis to that part of the annual report so that the user can understand that there is some significant uncertainties. We've got a section where we can emphasize the revision of previously issued financial statements. We can emphasize the restatement of corresponding figures. You would know that in financial statements you've got a corresponding figure for all the current year's figures. So if there's any adjustments from the prior year, which is made in this year, we can emphasize that. Then in material underspending, that is basically just for departments, where you have a vote, and if you've materially underspent on that vote, we will emphasize that. And that is a specific item in the public sector that you will not get in the private sector. Then on accruals, what we emphasize, overspending we do not emphasize, because that would then be in terms of unauthorized expenditure. That would be a non-compliance issue. Accruals would be in instances which we also have in the energy, another audit report, sorry, but the example that I have there in accruals is that if you have a boat which you have not spent fully, but your accruals is more than what the boat is that you still have, the unspent portion, it basically says that if you should have then expended those accruals, you would have gone over your budget. Ineffectively, you have incurred unauthorized expenditure, but they haven't actually paid those money. So that you can also emphasize. And then in instances more to public entities and municipalities is where we have going concern funding or financial sustainability concerns. That's all the emphasis of matter items. On the additional matters, again, as I said earlier, those are the things that we give to the user so that the user can understand our audit process. So we would say we can put in additional matter to say that the prior year was audited by another auditor. In the accounting terms, we just use a predecessor auditor. We can highlight the fact that there is material inconsistencies included in the annual report. So, for instance, you would see in our audit report, we have our opening paragraph, we say, our audit opinion is based on the page X to X. We do not audit the total annual report, but we do read the total annual report to see if there's any inconsistencies with the financial statements that we audit. So So if there is any inconsistencies, we will highlight that in the audit report. We do also highlight unaudited supplementary schedules. Those are things that the entity might include, which is not within our scope that we're going to audit. We can highlight the fact that there is a revision of previously issued financial statements. That is different from the one that I had in the emphasis of matter. That would basically be in a situation where an entity have issued their financial statements with our audit report, but subsequent to that tabling, we as the auditors or the entity become aware of a fact that would materially have to be adjusted in the financial statements. In such a situation, you would have a withdrawal of your issued financial statements and reissue it then again. In those instances, we will then also reissue our audit report, and we will emphasize that in an additional matters paragraph. And then in the public sector, for purposes of departments, and you'll see this in all departments' audit reports, we must also put in an additional matter paragraph on a financial reporting framework for departments, because they are on a modified cash basis of accounting. In terms of the international standards of auditing, that is not recognized as a common financial reporting framework. So we just emphasize that to the users so that they are aware of that. So I'm going over to the audit of predetermined objectives. Now, we have dealt with this in some detail when we saw you on Tuesday. Just to reconfirm that in our audit report in the 2010-11 financial year, we did not include a separate audit opinion on performance information, but we did indicate so to management what our opinion would be. And as we have highlighted in our session on Tuesday, it's basically in terms of our readiness assessment of entities in order for them to report on the performance information. Because when I referred to earlier, the Public Audit Act requires the Auditor General to issue an opinion or conclusion. In the current year and the years starting from 2005-06, we have included our factual material findings in the audit report. So it would be a mirror effect, but in our audit report we do not give an opinion. We just give all the material findings that we have. In the management report we include both the opinion and the material findings that we have. And that is just to prepare management in order for them to achieve a clean audit on the performance information. So what we're saying there, going forward, what will happen is that we would have one audit report containing an audit opinion on financial statements. That is the one that I previously referred to in terms of the balance sheet income statement, other matters, and the audit of predetermined objectives or performance information. So we would have one report having two audit opinions, one on financial statements, one on predetermined objectives. That audit opinion on predetermined objectives would be reported under other legal and regulatory requirements heading up the audit report, because it is a public sector specific requirement and not a requirement in terms of the international standards of auditing. And basically the format will have the same format as our normal financial statements opinion. We have an opinion. If there's any negative findings, we will have a basis of qualified or adverse or disclaimer of opinion. We might have emphasis of matters, and we might even have other matters that we can emphasize. But that hasn't happened yet. That is, we're going to assess that, and then in our audit directive that the Auditor General issues on an annual basis would then provide whether we're going to issue an audit opinion in the audit report or not. But for now, we are sticking to the way we have two, the factual findings in the audit report and the opinion and the factual findings in the management report. This slide you would have seen on Tuesday as well, where I just dealt with all the criteria that we audit predetermined objectives against. So we would look at compliance with regulatory and with regulatory requirements. We would look at usefulness and reliability. All that I've done since Tuesday session is to include a number next to the sub-criteria, which basically
what I explained at the bottom of that slide is the number in brackets represents the number of audit clients within the energy portfolio with material findings on the sub-criteria. So this can give you an indication of where the major concerns is. And you can see that with measurability is obviously one of the major concerns within this portfolio. And measurability is basically looking at the framework that National Treasury has issued for the setting up of performance information. You look at the SMART principle. So you look, is it simple, is it measurable, is it understandable, relevant, and timeliness of that information. Going to the next category of our audit report, we look at compliance with laws and regulations. On this, the Auditor General has identified certain subject matters that we focus on, that we report against, and those are the 12 ones that is listed there. I've also included in brackets the numbers of the audit clients in the energy portfolio with the material non-compliance findings. And in this instance, you can see number 3, the annual financial statements, the performance and annual reports has the most findings in that category. Just to give you some background, all of these subject matters, those 1 to 12, is basically stemming from requirements either from the PFMA or the Treasury regulations. So if you would see in an audit report, we would report under one of those subject matters, but we will refer to which section in the PFMA or Treasury regulation they have contravened. Now, I've also handed out the audit report, which is colored. You will see the first page is colored in yellow. Now, in order to make it as easy as possible for you to understand now, taking in consideration all the things that I've dealt with previous to this slide, I've color-coded the structure of our audit report. So you can see this is a template to our audit report in terms of the headings. In the audit report that I've given you, the printed one, is the one for the Department of Energy. So it would not have all the categories that is in the slide, but you would see that most of them are in there. So we first deal with the first page on the audit report, which is basically the introduction, the accounting officer of accounting authority's responsibility. Then we have the auditor general's responsibility, so that we make sure that the user understands exactly what should have been done in terms of completing the financial statements and what is our responsibility for in terms of auditing it. Then on the second page of the handout, you've got the opinion, which is highlighted in green, the lighter green. You would see in the energies instance, you had an unqualified audit opinion. Then highlighted in blue, you would see that we have the emphasis of matters and additional matters. Now, I said on the slide that it is only required if applicable. In the Department of Energy's instance, both of them were applicable, so both of them are in there, and you'll see that is highlighted in blue. Then we've got the report on other legal and regulatory requirements. Now, those are the items which is very specific to the public sector audit environment, where the first part is on the predetermined objectives, which is highlighted in pink. You'll see on the page, the first page of the audit report that I've handed out, is basically on all the performance information material findings that we had on the Department of Energy. Then going over to the fourth page, we've got the report on the compliance with rules and regulations, which is colored in green. And in the Department of Energy's case, we had issues both on the annual financial statements, strategic plan, and procurement. Then on the last category in the Department of Energy's case, we had internal control deficiencies that we have identified. And then you can see that is highlighted in gray. And basically, in the methodology that the Auditor General applies, we've got the three drivers of internal control. Those are leadership, financial performance management, and governance. In the case of the Department of Energy, We have highlighted deficiencies in leadership, financial and performance management only. Then in other instances of our audit reports, we can highlight other reports that was issued either via the department or ourselves during the year, and those could have been investigations, performance audits, or agreed upon procedures audits. But in this case, we haven't had any of those reports for the Department of Energy. So, honourable members, that is basically a structure of a normal audit report that you would see in the public sector. And this format you would see for all entities within this portfolio, each and every subsidiary as well. And also you would see it throughout the public sector for municipalities. All the other departments have the same structure. Now, coming specifically to the Department of Energy, and I'm going to go very fast through this because we have dealt with this in our Tuesday session, and I've alluded to it as well during the previous slide. It's basically the Department of Energy. We had an unqualified audit opinion, first of all. On the other matters highlighted, we had emphasis of matter on unauthorized and irregular expenditure. On the additional matters, as I mentioned previously, we have standard paragraphs that we have in all our departments. First of all, for the Department of Energy, we have unaudited supplementary schedules, and those are basically the annexures to the financial statements. So you see in the annual report of the Department of Energy, you would have the financial statements in terms of the income statement balance sheet, and you have the disclosure notes, and at the back of the disclosure notes, you have your annexures, which is not part of the scope of our audit. So we just included that to make sure that the user doesn't understand that we have audited those. And then we also have an additional matter paragraph on the financial reporting framework. As I explained earlier, that is required by the International Standards on Auditing to make sure that the user understands why a department is reporting on a modified cash basis. Then coming to predetermined objectives, we have reported matters of material note in terms of the usefulness of information, and you would see in our audit report all the explanations that we give why we had concerns with the usefulness of the information, which is largely on the measurability of it. Then going to Category 4 on compliance, where we had non-compliance reported under the Division of Revenue Act. And then secondly, on the PFMA, which is basically your irregular and unauthorized expenditure, the submission of the financial statements with material adjustments that was made to that financial statement, and then the inconsistency in terms of the strategic and annual performance report. And lastly, in terms of our methodology to then provide a root cause to all of these findings, we have also included in our audit report where the internal control deficiencies lie, and as reported in our audit report, we have identified deficiencies in leadership and financial and performance management. So that is basically the outcomes for the Department of Energy. Now, coming back to the table that I had right at the beginning, you would see that in the portfolio of energy, there is quite a substantial number of the 47 in total that is lying in that green category, which we are very happy with, because that is the category that we commonly refer to as the clean administration or clean audit. That is the category where I said earlier where your financial opinion is unqualified, you're positive, and that you do not have any performance or compliance matters that was reported. You would see that there is quite a jump from previous year to the second category, which is the yellow line, where we still have an unqualified financial statements opinion, but we do have non-compliance or findings on predetermined objectives. That has risen from 13 to 22, which needs attention from each of the entities and departments. And I'm just going to jump to that last four lines of this table, and that is basically giving the explanation of where the issues are. So you see that there has been quite a a number of additional non-compliance findings, where in the last year we only had 3 and this year we had 8. And then also on both compliance and predetermined with objectives, also a number that has risen, where we have on both non-compliance and predetermined objectives from 4 to 12. So there has to be emphasis in this portfolio on the issues of predetermined objectives and compliance, because on the financial opinion, we need to just make sure and confirm that they will sustain that clean audit on that, but not to digress in terms of the other matters. And then, as I said, I'm happy to report that there is not one audit in this portfolio that had a qualified audit opinion or a modified audit opinion. And I'm happy to take any questions from the portfolio committee. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Strubis. Yes. Honourable members, as we move along, I think one of the things we have in the back of our mind is that, is that input enhancing our ability to analyse financial reports? Well, that's the main aim. You know, let's interact with the document. Let's check, let's ask, let's comment. Maybe asking more than anything, more than comment would be helpful for now. Or comment for the sake of getting corrected, or just checking the, you know, the accuracy or our understanding. The floor is yours. Thanks very much for now. There it is. I think what we have done is take us through as to what happens when you do the analysis of the financial report, and you also used the concrete situation, that of the current financial, I mean last financial year's report, you know, to link such analysis. Honourable members, I'm itching. If you do not want to talk, okay, that is fine.
Going back to your famous slide, I was intrigued that when you put up this thing here, you went to this last slide, which is actually for me the key to this thing. The deterioration at the top, even in the green and in the yellow. Clearly, we haven't seen the report yet, and we'll probably look at it and find out. Are you able to tell me very quickly what happened?
Jay, do you want me to answer the questions after each one, or do we ask more than one question? Okay. Honourable member, I can, on those categories, we look at performance information and on compliance. So basically, you would look at these two sites where, first of all, on performance information that you see on measurability, you had quite a number of issues around the usefulness of performance information. So that is the first cause of the deterioration. Secondly, on the compliance, where we have the issues highlighted there in the numbers, and specifically on item number 3 there, the annual financial statements, performance and annual reports, where we have a lot of entities within this portfolio that had issues around the quality of the financial statements that was issued to us for auditing. So those are the two main contributors to the deterioration.
And in that regard, do you have a sense of what could have been happening? We are concerned about the fact that the department has an issue of staffing and stuff like that. Could it be that that is the case that contributes to this?
As I said, in our audit report, what we do is at this item number 5 on the slide, we do give you the internal control deficiencies.
Mm.
So in terms of those two items, and it's throughout the portfolio, you can link it to those two, leadership and financial and performance management. So basically on leadership, you're looking at the oversight within the entity, which has to happen more frequently, not on the end of the financial year, because then you have already had a full financial year where your financial statements and the records are full of deficiencies. That's the first issue that is the root cause. Secondly, you have performance, financial performance management, where you're looking at the system, specifically in the department, that is not adequate to support the business that they are in. So those are the two root causes that we are noted.
I think, Chair, it makes the point that I've made previously, before you came, and of course I made it earlier this year, that, and I think at the last meeting of the department, the department senior executive, one of the senior executives, made the lament of this strain that they're taking because of vacancies that are not filled at the very senior level. And that's now beginning to show, because 2 years ago I made this point that it's okay to talk about doing more with less, but up to a certain point, you get to a tipping point, and beyond that, you can't go, you know, because then the deterioration becomes quite significant. So we're going to have to push hard on those unfilled vacancies to make sure that the staffing is adequate, so that the supervision that and the management that seems to be lacking can be picked up. Thanks.
I mean, it gets reflected in the leadership.
Yeah. Yes, very much.
Thank you.
Just for information, Dr. O'Reilly, our chair. The process is that the minister has the budget, each department is accepted. What happens that in while we continue in the year, one lot of allotments is not used? How easy is it to transfer that to some other project? Or other way around? Or what's the process?
Honourable Member and Chair, there is a legislative process, first of all, for the department. So, for instance, in the Department of Energy, they would need to address the transfer of funds, which is commonly known as the environments, where they've only had if they are going to have a vote that they have a certain budget for, they can then ask for that money to be transferred to another program. And that is determined in terms of the Treasury regulations. Usually only about 8% of that budget can be transferred. That is highly regulated in terms of that process. In terms of the entities, there's not a legislative provision for that, but it is usually in terms of their internal policies and procedures that there would be a process then to deal with a transfer from one budget holder to the next.
Chair, yes, the audit outcomes, the opinion being a very positive one, unqualified, quite in contradiction to what I'm used to when I served at local government level. And this is encouraging. But unauthorized and irregular expenditure, is there not another category of expenditure which borders more to the criminal intent? Is this the only two categories in terms of expenditure? And would you like, what can we read specifically in terms of the department incurred unauthorized expenditure and irregular expenditure given this current situation?
Well, for the department, as you rightly said, they've incurred two types of the expenditure which is defined in the Public Finance Management Act, the PFMA. You've got actually four types. The one is unauthorized expenditure, which I'll get to in terms of the department, what happened, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and then you've got material losses material losses that is incurred. Now, the department, as I said, incurred unauthorized expenditure. Basically, what happened there is that they had an allocation in the previous financial year to a entity which by error didn't transfer from their budget allocation to the department's budget allocation, and then after the previous financial year, they did it in the financial year 2010-11, which it was not budgeted for. So there was an error, a human error, in terms of where the budget was allocated when the budget was then transferred in this 2010-11, which would then constitute unauthorized expenditure because it wasn't budgeted for in the 2010-11 financial year, but it was so in 2009-10. That's the first category that the department has contravened. Irregular expenditure, if you look at paragraphs, which one is it, 10 and 11, basically the first category of irregular expenditure was incurred due to authorization on a wrong level of authority. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act, the accounting officer needs to determine a level of authority within the department. And what happened is that these expenditures in total, it was separate instances, but in total was approved by a level lower than the level of authority. And that basically the reason the department has given us is because of a lack of staff at that point in time. Then the second category was on a peer supply chain management legislative process that wasn't followed. And that's in paragraph 11.
Just a follow-up, Jim. Just in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and material losses, is that more the category that would, and it's not specifically appropriate there, but that's the category that would lead us to believe some form of criminality there. Am I correct to make that assumption?
No, not completely. In the audit process, we do not categorize any expenditure as such as criminal or fraudulent. That has to happen after investigation, and that would be a forensic investigation, either by the department itself or by appointed service provider. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure would be expenditure that could have been avoided. That is the definition that's in the PFMA. So that could be a typical example if you have penalties and interest, which you have not should have not have incurred it because of a human error or somebody forgot to make a payment. Material losses could be a variety of things. There's also in the Treasury regulations a variety of instances where you might have material losses, and that could be an instance, for example, where you've written off assets that you have lost or that was stolen or so forth. So it, not necessarily would it be a forensic or fraudulent transaction. It could be that there is reasons for those expenditures.
And the Auditor General normally makes the recommendation that, do you make a recommendation that you would then advise, say, this committee to consider forensic investigation or whatever? Would it be in the audited statements? And if that recommendation is made, and the forensic investigation has been done, what would the position be if the forensic investigation is not being made public? Is there any remedy that we can use in that regard?
Honourable Members, Chair, in the Treasury regulations and the PFMA, there is a process that follows after expenditure has been identified as one of these expenditures, these four types of expenditures, where we get into the financial misconduct provisions. And you will see one of our focus areas on compliance, the very last one is number 12, financial misconduct. That is a process that the accounting officer must follow. So it would not be a recommendation from us. It is legislative that they must follow an investigation process, either if there was somebody found guilty of contravening, a disciplinary process must follow. If nobody was found guilty, then it would be a case of either they need to then get condemnation for that expenditure. If instances where accounting officer or accounting authority did not follow that provisions, we would then report it as a non-compliance in terms of this subject matter.
You make reference to 47 audit reports. There's an increase from 2010 to 2011, from 46 to 47. Who was the additional, which one was the additional there, if me? If you're able to recollect. It's no big deal if you can't.
Yes, it's basically the Department of Energy that was included this year, which it was not. We didn't include the Department of Minerals and Energy in the prior year evaluation for those purposes,
mm-hmm.
because it would have been, it's not the same department. So it's basically just the Department of Energy that we took out, or we included this year.
Mm-hmm. One thing one has noted is the increase, when it comes to findings versus non-findings. There's been an increase in both, in fact, isn't it? No, there's been a decrease in non-finding from 33 to 25. And there's been an increase in finding from 15 to 22. Why?
Okay, it is due to the slides that I showed on performance information and compliance. So you see those numbers there in the red are the issues that caused some of those numbers to increase from the clean audit to the yellow category, and both in compliance and performance information. So it is because of performance information findings that the entity did not have performance information and compliance findings that the entity did not have last year but this year. So the financial statements opinion is still unqualified, but in this year they've got either compliance or performance information findings. So if you look at the table there at the bottom three rows, you see that also the number of findings the number of entities that has had findings on performance information, compliance, or on both of those categories have in the bottom two lines increased from the prior year. So for compliance only, you had 3 last year, but this year you had 8, and then for findings on both performance information and compliance you had 4, and this year you have 12 entities. But what is encouraging is, though, that you've seen that performance information findings alone, last year we had 6, this year we only had 2. So there is a certain amount of maturity that we have seen in this portfolio in terms of the performance information.
It's hard to cope with that just in one session. Maybe as we move along, we'll settle. Because the terminologies, we have to appreciate, you use them every day to us. They still have to settle even in our minds, you know. Well, we understand the English, but, you know, their relevance and meaning in this context is something. I take note of what you're saying, that what is encouraging is the decrease in findings on predetermined objectives. But then the question is, what is it that they are improving there? What is it that the department is improving on?
Okay, in that case, it is not the department. The department has actually not included in that numbers because it hasn't been there previous year, and this year they have compliance and predetermined objectives. So the Department of Energy, they would be included in the 12, in that very last line. The department itself actually, if you look at it, had the number of measurability findings. So it's difficult to comment from a comparison because it wasn't there last year as a department.
Last year?
In the 2019, the Department of Energy wasn't as isolated department.
Okay, another complication as well. So it means meaningfully we can compare the department's performance as Department of Energy between 2010-11 and 2011-12. Okay. Can you move your slide? There's another slide I want to check on. Move. Go on. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's it. The measurability have the highest number of findings. Why? Or how?
Chair, I think if we take, for example, the audit report of energy, the measurability findings that we have on the performance information that they presented is basically in terms of let me just confirm here, the indicators and targets, which was not consistent, first of all, and then secondly, those indicators and targets was not measurable in terms of the SMART principle. If you look at measurability, timeliness, the simple look at as we discussed on Tuesday session, where you would have a target or an indicator that a user can read and understand what are they measuring themselves on. Like, for instance, the example that we can use is that if an instance where a department will formulate an indicator and a target to set up a policy for themselves, but they do not define what is the policy. Is it a draft policy? Is it a final policy? Is it a policy that is addressing a specific concern? Or is it a policy that would eventually lead to a requirement to be established?